to Romeo India Whiskey. Here's my call letters. My name is Dick. And along with Mel, K2 Kilo Echo Yankee. At the time, we run a thing called the TechNet. And for those who haven't heard the TechNet before, its major purpose is education, entertainment. How do you make this complicated hobby of ham radio a little bit more fun? How do you understand how all the hardware works? That's the main purpose. We gather the clan every Sunday night for the last 26 years, let me think, 1982. Yeah, 26 years. Every Sunday night, we gather the clan and share information. A staff of experts that show up here have got all kinds of knowledge and experience, and they convey it to us. That's how it works. A person signs into the TechNet by giving Mel and Dick your call letters, your name. You got to give them your name because Dick is so darn forgetful. You give him your call letters, your name, and a confirming yes, which means you do have a question or a comment for the net. A typical sign-in would sound like this, WS2N, Paul, and yes. So do we have any check-ins? Please give me your call letters and name at this time. K2RIW listening.
M2EO, Rich and yes.
Rich recognized. Anyone else?
KB2VDV, Laura.
KB2YY, Joe, yes.
JC2MDP, Steve, no questions.
KB30MCheck, and name here is Ryan from Pennsylvania.
Okay, Ryan, NPX, what was the prefix, Ryan? And are you saying yes or no also?
What's sorry about that. The full call sign is Kilo Bravo 30 Mike Papa Extreme. Kilo Bravo 30 Mike Papa Extreme.
I think you're saying Kilo Bravo 3 Mike Papa X-ray. Is that true, Ryan?
Yes, that would be the correct call sign there.
Okay, is that a yes, Ryan? You do have a question?
No, I don't have a question. I'm just checking to that.
Okay, Ryan, we've got Joe. We got Steve with a no. We got Ryan with a no. We got Joe with a yes. We got Laura, I'm guessing, with a yes, and Rich with a yes. Anyone else to check in? Give me your call letters and name at this time.
Yes. Yes, I have a question.
Okay, that was a double. I heard NJC with a yes. NJC, give me your name and your full call, sir.
Name is Bill. Call is KB2NJC. Yes, I have a question.
Okay, Bill, and who's the person that jumped double with Bill?
KB2SNW. Doug, no.
Okay, Doug, with a no. Got you. Let's start off at the top of the list. Rich, what's new in Whitestone? And is Jingles over her flu? N2EO, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay, Dick. Well, Jingles is a he, and yes, he's over the flu, and he's down here with me. I don't know why, but he doesn't come down all week. But he is the TechNet. I'm serious. I'm not putting you on. He came down here just as you were... What a TechNet. N2EO. Okay, Dick. Not a question. It's on behalf of Laura, who's on frequency, KB2VDV. And the reason I'm checking in, Dick, Laura is in a situation where she lives in a six-story of, I believe, 20-story building. It's a concrete steel building. She can't get antennas up. She's not on HF, just VHF and UHF. And I happen to see something on, because she had mentioned originally getting the Yaesu 817, which is sort of a ham version of a commercial man pack. I just sent you a link. I don't know if you clicked on it yet or you checked on your computer. But I saw something very interesting and I thought of Laura right away, and that's the commercial man pack. Because, probably going to cost him a couple of thousand dollars, and it might be extravagant for him who's got a ongoing station, but she doesn't have a station. This would be her station. And I don't know if this particular company, but it's a company called Codan, C-O-D-A-N. They make something called the 2110 Manpack radio. And what has got over something like a Yaesu 817 is Yaesu is like 5 watts and it's got an 800 mil battery pack. This thing is 25 watts DED, so it's got some real punch. You can get it with options of either a 4, 8, or a 13 amp hour battery package. Quite a good size battery. Probably cost a fortune, but it might be worth it to her. I sent you a link. Take a look at it if you're near the computer, Dick. It has a built-in auto antenna tuner. It covers 1.6 to 30 megahertz continuous upper and lower sideband and CW. Wonder what you think if you've had any experience with Manpack. If you're familiar with...
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
How much did I do it? All right, Dick, I see I timed out.
Yes, you did time out. I found the email you sent me. I found the website. I'm looking at the Kodan 2110 Manpack, very stoochy looking rig with a large handset alongside. It looks very mil-spec like. I suspect it's going to be a little bit on the pricey side. I presume what you're proposing for Laura, because of her location, is that with this Manpack she can go remote base or remote locations and set up antennas. Or do you think there's some way that she could use this from her apartment? That wasn't quite clear how you propose that she use this piece of equipment. Back to you, Rich.
I can tell you about something about it. Say wife.
Okay, and I sent the link to Mel. Yeah, what I was saying is that she's literally on the water. She's in Coney Island. I think it was 25 watts DC. And the thing has a 13 amp hour battery pack. She'd do pretty well. It's got a pop-up antenna. You can take, they make a tape dipole for it. It's got a built-in auto tuner. Let me stop talking and turn it back to you, Dick. What do you know about Manpack? What do you know about this radio? I believe it's a European company. And then turn it over to Mel at 2EO.
Yeah, my guess is you're proposing that Laura take this rig, set up temporary antennas on Todd Hill on top of the highest point in Staten Island, and do some operating. But since Mel knows about this rig, Mel, tell us what you know about it. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Okay, this is K2KEY. Now, one of the guys that belongs to our club, W82JNF, Sue, has one, and he takes it down the beach. He's on the beach here with it. And it's quite a piece of gear. It's got quite a price tag also. And it is very substantial made radio, that is for sure. But it's got a bit of weight to it and all. And it's got this antenna that really extends on it. So I looked at it carefully. And I will say to you that there's a couple of nice portable, you know, radios that they make, like the Yaesu and the Icons and all, that may fit the bill, because this thing is quite an expense, Dick, over.
What's the approximate price class we're talking about here, Mel? Is it in the $3,000 or $4,000 category?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think it was more than that. I don't remember, but I think at least around four grand with all the special connectors and things and the battery packs and everything. This is made to be used by a jump group, you know, they're jumping out of an airplane and setting up a field operation, Dick. It's one of those, you know, military version pieces of equipment. Definitely, you tell it's military as soon as you look at it, over.
Yeah, the company that Rich sent us to that's selling it is called International. This looks like a doesn't look like a domestic product. So I can tell what Mel is saying, Rich. The quality of the equipment, how well it'll work and whatever, and how transportable it is one of the variables. Another variable for most of us is what does it cost? Had we all been smart enough to put our money under the mattress 6 months or a year ago, spending something like this wouldn't hurt us. But now, we've lost our money in the stock market. We're waiting for it to come back. And people are not traveling. They're saving their money. We're not using gasoline and so on. So something this pricey is not completely easy to justify. But I guess the Tashners and Laura are pretty well off people. And so money is no object. Let's have the Cadillac or the Rolls Royce. I'm having a little bit of fun with you, as you can tell, Rich. So its quality is only one of the variables. Cost is another. We amateurs are extremely good at buying used equipment at a small fraction of the brand new price. And with people like Andy, the B2CDO, who can fix anything, as a prominent member of this club, it's almost impossible, with rare exception, to buy a lemon. I bought a lemon once, but that's another whole story, where, you know, the hold-on synthesizer was essentially useless because of a whole bunch of defective components. But other than something as disastrous as that, a rig that's being sold on the surplus market that's got a dented front panel, that's been thrown down a flight of stairs, no one single component in there is that expensive. You can fix it. And so if you wanted to, you could save some money. So quite possibly you and Laura are making decisions like that, or will. But let's hear a little bit more about your philosophy of this particular purchase, Rich. N2EO, K2LIW in the TechNet.
One more thing that K2KY called to us.
Yeah, Mel said he's got something else. Go ahead, Mel.
Yeah, I think Laura may know Stu, WA2JNF. She could contact him. He's a nice guy, Stu. And he lives also not too far from Laura. And so if she wanted to take an eyeball, I bet you Stu would be more than glad to give her a demo on it. They're very local to each other, Dick. Over.
Okay, somebody is trying to say something to us, but the audio is so low, we're not hearing it. Want to try again?
Yeah, KC2LTY.
Okay, Mr. LTY, you've got some information on this. Start up with your name, sir.
I just like to check in. I'm a little late. My name is Richie.
Okay, Richie, we got you on the list. So, N2EO, go ahead, Rich.
Okay, Dick. Well, the philosophy is that why I'm suggesting this to Laura, and I know it would probably, I don't know the price, but commercial it's going to be pricey. I know that. Most people will spend $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 in a lifetime on a ham station. Laura doesn't have a ham station. This would be her ham station. So that's my philosophy right there. It's as opposed to a Yaesu 817 or Micom 703, it's apples and oranges. This is commercial grade, and it's also 25 watts DC and has a built-in auto antenna tuner. It's all digital, field upgradable, firmware, and as opposed to an 800 milliamp battery pack, you can get up to a 13 amp hour battery pack. So this is basically like a 100 watt radio in the house, except 25 watts, and what, 60. And, you know, I think it's something that she won't be disappointed in, and that's a feeling I get that it's going to sock out a signal for her. I don't know, it comes with me, a pop up antenna to make a tape dipole. I think you know what that is. Military use of it. High gain made a tape dipole, which is basically a dipole made out of tape measures measured off of meters. So if you want to set up an 80 meter antenna, it's very simple. If you got the room in a park or something, you know it's going to be halfway, which is 40 meters. So you realize 20 meters a side on each side. Hook it up to the radio, and if you don't get it exactly resonant, the thing has an auto tuner, so it has some good virtues. That was my thinking. She does not have a ham station. She's kind of stuck on VHF and UHF, wants to get on HF. And when I first saw this, I thought it might be good for her. Let me turn it back to you, Dick. Turn it over to Laura, see if she's got any questions to ask you directly. K2RIW-N2EO.
Okay, I'll be turning it over to Laura in a minute, but I've got you on this one, Rich. And it's something that you're forgetting. During a field day operation, which is one of the biggest events in ham radio every year, we all gather in a field on a tent under emergency conditions. We set up temporary antennas, and we have a grand old time. We pass food back and forth and war stories and do some operating to the wee hours of the morning for a 24-hour period continuously or a little bit more. That's a fun thing. If you did that every other day, it would wear off real fast. The guys who enter the VHF contest in June, August, and September, there is a class of operation called Rover, in which they, with portable equipment, go on top of mountaintops and whatever and do operating. So, except for the 3 or 4 days per year, the vast majority of amateurs do not operate in the field. So what we're forgetting here is that operating in the field under temporary conditions a few times per year, as sort of camping out, particularly with your buddies, under contest conditions, it is a lot of fun. But as a daily method of operating, it is not fun. You take, for instance, my good buddy, K2UIH, Alan Katz, of Moonbound fame. He has been publishing for 30 years now, the 432 and above EME News. Let me drop. 20-some-odd years ago, he rented a piece of property on top of a mountain in New Jersey, where he lives, where he set up a very large 20-foot diameter parabolic dish, and he was doing 432 megacycle moonbounds. And from the portable operation on top of the mountain on the rental property, the dish worked like a charm. But it was 25 miles or something like that away from his house, and he had a problem. There were times when the band was open and he's at home. There are times he's on top of the mountain and the band is not open, or the conditions for moonbounds are not good. If the place where you do your ham radio operating and if the place where you live are not the same place, life gets complicated. A few times per year, yes. As a steady diet, except for a person who really likes camping out, it's not completely fun. So let's at least consider the possibility of trying to create for Laura a ham station at her home. Without a doubt, from the 6-story of the 20-story building, and it's probably a super that will not allow external antennas on top of the building, without a doubt it's difficult. The good news is that almost everybody is on cable television these days, so a lot of the television interference we used to suffer is essentially gone. There are ways of hanging a piece of a 26-gauge enameled wire out the window as a pure vertical antenna from the 6th floor down, and maybe find a way of attaching it so it doesn't swing at the bottom. But pure vertical antenna down the side of the building could possibly, because of the 6 stories of altitude, work better than the portable antenna under the portable location. So with stealthy antenna techniques, have we really expanded, have we really explored all the possibilities here? If even a mediocre station can be established in her place of residence, and she doesn't have to keep going in the field, where you can, make yourself a sandwich, sit in front of the rig, and listen while you're having supper and watching television. The conveniences of a home and a co-location of a ham radio operation there, I think you can see where I'm going. Picture every time that you and Jingles go down into the basement, if you had to pack yourself into your vehicle and go to the nearest mountaintop 15 miles away, another do operating, how often would you do it? I think you see where I'm going here. Let me first back you for the
repeater. Timeout. Repeater. Timeout. Cancel.
Let me first pass back to you, Rich, for the philosophy on this one. If you see where I'm going, before we have Laura listen to all the possibilities and try to make a decision out of all this. N2EO, K2RAW in the TechNet.
Yeah, then turn it back to me, Dick. I'll give you one more piece of advice on this. I've had a couple of friends who went through the same situation.
I thought so. Rich, first, go ahead.
Okay, Dick. Now, I agree with what you're saying. The reason I suggested is Laura is literally across the street from the beach in Coney Island. So it's not, all she has to do is walk across the street, can't Dick?
Yeah, but it's still not the place of residence, and it's setting up temporary equipment on land that you don't own. As a camping operation a few times per year, yes. As a daily operating procedure, ain't so much fun, I don't think. But Maybe there's some exceptions. Let's see what Mel's got to say. K2KEY. Go ahead, Mel.
Roger, this is K2KEY. Yeah, especially this time of the year, I don't think you'd have very much fun out on that boardwalk. I know exactly where she lives, not far from here. I can almost see it from here. And going out on that, I'm out at the beach almost every day of the week, and I can tell you it's rough out there. This time of the year. My friend lives in New York in a thing that runs about, I don't know, maybe his building is 20 stories high, maybe 24, maybe who knows. You know, one of the real high rises. I think he's up around 8th, yeah, he's on the 8th floor. He worked with me, and we put together, I think I mentioned it, that booth we made out of copper pipe basically just made it out of joints, you know, out of piece of length of copper and elbows and angles, you know, regular stuff that you buy in the Home Depot. It all came from Home Depot. And he has, I don't know if Laura has a patio on her apartment, but he set up this roof just on his roof, tiny patio. He has, I'm not exaggerating, I think two people out on that patio, and it was jam-packed, but he managed to put that out on there. And he bought himself just basic radio because he says he didn't have much faith in that he would be able to do very much. And he got himself a ICOM 7818. In fact, I have the same one in the mobile. And on CW, he was afraid of phone, and he works out quite well, Dick, on 20 meters over.
Yeah, okay. There are the isotron-type antennas that operate from indoors. There's the loop antennas that you've been experimenting with that operate indoors. There's the dipole that can hang out the window with a weight on the end of it, and it's only put out on non-windy days at nighttime. There are guys who have taken helical half-wave antennas, helical-wound, monopole-like half-wave antennas, and because it's a half-wave and not a quarter-wave antenna, the metal railing of the balcony is more than enough ground, and from the 6th floor or the 20th floor, people have done some extremely good operating on, say, 20 meters. Even if Laura doesn't have a balcony, there are kinds of antennas that you can hang out the window. Norm, K2KEY, I think he used to live in the Oceanside, he's now a Silent Key. When he lived in Brooklyn, he made an antenna out of the metal frame of the storm window of his apartment, and operated that way on HF frequencies with QRP. So there are lots of stealthy antennas that can be stuck out the window at nighttime, that can be hung down the side of the building, that can be co-located in the apartment with you, that will give you not top-of-the-line operation, but 75% of that performance when you're smart enough to build the right kind of antenna. So, as you can see, Rich, Mel and I are strongly in favor of finding a way of creating the antenna under less than ideal conditions in the place where Laura lives. There are a number of books that have been written on the subject of, stealthy antennas, invisible kinds of antennas in difficult environments, where the wiring up the side of the building, the downspouts, the rain gutters, flagpoles, things that are stuck out the window at nighttime, and so on. Lots and lots of ways, and antennas that can be strung in the apartment itself, taped to the ceiling, strung across the ceiling and whatever. Dipoles in the apartment themselves on HF, under certain conditions, work reasonably well. So I think we should investigate that first before buying a fairly expensive piece of equipment that must be used under remote conditions, and doing that in the wintertime, I think, is going to be tough. Now, maybe Laura likes camping out. I've seen the picture of her in front of your rig, and maybe she's an extremely tough lady who likes the challenge. So, Laura, we're going to ask you, what do you think of what you've heard so far? KB2, ZDV, K2RIW. You got it, Laura.
Oh, well, thank you. You answered my question. Wow, you gave me an earful. Well, I mean, that sounds like a deep, expensive rig. Richie is trying to find ways for me to accommodate. Although the maintenance and everybody else, the whole administration here in the building, they do not want anything outside the window touching the brick. And since I'm surrounded by other large concrete buildings, also 23 stories, you really cannot get out. That's the problem. So I was trying to tell this because there are other ham radio operators in this building, and they tell me you'll be lucky if you even get something on 10 meters. It's just that all the concrete around here, surrounded by all the other buildings, nothing's going to come through. So we were just I was hoping just to get some kind of an HF rig, telescopic antenna, put it in a knapsack with wheels, and maybe someday just like sit on the beach or on the boardwalk in the park or something, a little bit more open space where I can get something. Maybe hopefully I can do some contesting. And I know Jeff Stewis, WHJNF, while you guys were chatting and explaining all this, I already sent him an email. But anyway, he sent over to you, Dick, KB2VDV.
Okay, so those callers again, the man just signed it. Say it slowly, sir.
It's KC2LYU from Brooklyn, New York.
It's safe. Okay, this is LYU. We're going to go to you in a second. Laura, is there any possibility that you could get permission to put an antenna on the top of the building? Yes, you'd have to run a small piece of cable up the side of the building to get there. But is that completely out of the question? Over to you, Laura.
If that was the case, I would have done it years ago. The answer is no. I cannot. They don't want anything outside the window. They don't want anything outside sitting on the windowsill. People told me, forget the kind of antenna, tube antennas. The nosy neighbors will rat me out in a second. I'm not going to fight with them. You know, my mom lives with me now. I'm not going to fight with them. Yeah, sure, they could be nice and say, hey, lady, just bring it in, don't do it. Or they can really give me a hard time, and I'm not about to lose my apartment over this.
I hear you. Is there the possibility that at nighttime, in the dark, you could stick an antenna out the window, do your operating, when you're through with the operating, bring the antenna back in? I'm talking about an antenna that's, let's say, 5 feet long, and it's got a stiff pole to it. It clamps onto the windowsill, and so it sticks out the window at a 45-degree angle or a 90-degree angle at nighttime. When you're through with your operating, you bring it back in, so it's never there to be viewed in the daytime. Would that kind of an operation be possible, in your opinion, Laura? Go ahead.
No, no, no. I know about that. No.
Okay. Can you give me a couple of words? The answer is no, to stick something out the window at nighttime in the dark and bring it back in when you're through. That's impossible because...
it's against the rules and regulations of where I live. They already sent memos out.
Now, brother. Mel, have you heard of situations where the rules are so strict that you can't even stick something out the window at nighttime, which is invisible? Have you heard of such things, Mel?
Roger. In fact, that's my friend in New York. Lucky enough that he had that little patio deal off the apartment, off the that I guess Laura doesn't have on her apartment. In fact, he took that loop antenna that I mentioned that we made, and he painted it black so that at night it's completely invisible. There's one other guy that's in our club got a similar problem, and what he did, something very clever. What he did, because he gets on 20 meters again. He also basically confines his operating to digital or CW mode, and he took two cardboard tubes and he wound himself one antenna. Well, he wound one for it. In other words, enough wire to make a dipole, but wound them on these cardboard tubes. So he sits them out on the windowsill at night. And again, they're painted black. You can't possibly see it. Nothing hanging out there. And that's what he gets on with. He uses these two cardboard tubes, which actually form. It's a dipole, basically, rolled up onto the 3-inch diameter cardboard tubes, and he takes them in when he's not operating. He's made up one for 10, he's got one for 20, I don't know what. I think he was winding one, he told me, for 40. But he says, listen, it doesn't work the most fabulous, you know, not the most fabulous, but at least he says, I've got something, he says, that I can use. And at times when propagation right now, 10 meters and all those, you know, propagation is terrible right now. Propagation gets better. You'll be amazed what you can do with even a simple setup like that. Let me let it drop and I'll say one more word. I also have a little portable setup that I use that I take down to the park, you know, just when we have a little thing there at the park. And I've got basically a little carrier, one of these luggage carriers, and I put a battery on the bottom of it, and on top of it goes my little rig. Happens to be either my 706 or my 718 ICOM, and you can clamp the antenna right onto the luggage carrier, and you got a portable setup there for a fraction of the cost what it's going to cost you for one of those man packs, and it'll do the same thing. It's a 100-watt radio, and you can pull it along if you want. You can even I've even had it operating as a bike mobile, Dick, over.
Yeah, that's a pretty athletic way to go. Okay, these are some of the possibilities. Laura, you're on 2 meters right now. What are you using for an antenna? And is that antenna inside of your apartment? Over to you, Laura.
Yes, the antenna is a mag mount sitting on the inside.
Okay. If you had an HF antenna that worked on the inside, would that be equally as legal as the 2 meter antenna you're using right now?
I'm not able to copy you. There's a lot of static coming through my end right now.
Okay. I think I see what you're saying. Once again, I'll repeat the question. If there was a high-frequency antenna that you could be using inside of your apartment, very similar to the way the 2-meter antenna is that you're using inside of your apartment, do you believe that would be allowed? Over to you, Laura.
I guess, but I don't want to radiate myself.
Okay, you don't have to worry about radiating yourself. Okay. I mean, if you're worrying about radiating yourself, the 2-meter antenna is pouring a lot more signal into your body than the HF antenna would. I know, the 2-meter antenna, you're probably running a handy-talky. It's only running a couple of watts, whereas the HF rig, you could also run 5 watts if you were a low-power operator, a so-called QRP operator. But the good news about HF antennas, let's say, for instance, you put up a 20-meter antenna in the apartment, that antenna would be in the vicinity of 16 feet long with loading coils and whatever, and it's spreading its power over that whole length. So the amount that gets to you is very small. On top of that, on HF frequencies, the good news is that the radio signal that hits a human being on HF frequencies, 90-some-odd percent of it, goes through the body and has no effect. It's only the frequencies between 30 and 300 megacycles, the VHF region, where the RF energy that hits you gets absorbed and turned into heat. The lower frequencies go right through, the higher frequencies than that get reflected off your skin. So the most significant ones to worry about when it comes to radio frequency biohazard is 30 to 300 megacycles, which is what you're using right now. So I'm fairly convinced there are ways that you can put a safe antenna inside of your apartment. But I know you've got concrete buildings around you. I know that's not going to work extremely well. So it looks like portable operation in the springtime on warm days, which is what Rich is talking about, is I guess one of the better ways for you to go. Unless you're a very rugged person, I don't see you doing that very much in the wintertime. You take, for instance, Barry, N2MB, he goes and runs 9 miles in the wintertime. Winter to him doesn't slow him down, but he's a bit unusual. Let's see if anyone has any further suggestions on this subject. I know that Daniel wanted to say something. Daniel, were you signing in? Just answer that question. Were you signing in with a question later on, or did you have something that you wanted to add to this particular situation? KC2LYU, K2RIW on the TechNet. My name is Dick.
Roger, yes, over you. Yes, I have a S17 Yaesu 5-watt radio, and uses a half antenna in Magnamas, and you can talk all over to the world, to Hill, to Canada, Israel, or British, anyway. And she put him on a floor, a big bracket. She can put Vanna by on a carpet, nobody knows it. She put the Magnum on the top of there. She can talk all over, 5 watts, all over. Back to you. Guess from you.
C2C with a comment.
Something C with a comment. Give me your full set of call letters and your name, sir.
Hi, this is Whiskey Charlie 2 Charlie, WC2C Aaron.
Okay, part of what you said got covered up, Aaron. Aaron, what's your suggestion?
Hi, this is WC2C. When I was in college, a long time ago, a friend of mine lived in exactly the building that Laura lives in. And I think he lived on the fifth floor. He had a WB2 call sign. Now, we're talking 1968. And we were good friends, so I came to his house, and I saw his amateur radio setup. He had a helicopter's S40B radio, the one with the big green dial, and he had crystal-controlled home out of a kit and a Miko 40-meter CW transmitter. What he used for an antenna in that same building was very thin wire, and the way he did it was with a fishing pole and a little bit, like you say, in the evening, the wire would go down the side of the building. When it'd be finished, he used the reel to reel it back up. And he showed me all his QSL cards, and he got out really, really well. I don't know what part of the sunspot cycle 1968 and 1969 were, but he had a zillion QSL cards, and it worked great for him. WC2C, back to net control.
68, 69 was
on, man. It was a very good condition. Sorry, still got a cold. Yeah, those years were near the peak of the sunspot cycle, which helped a lot. Yeah, I'm thinking there are various ways that a safe antenna can be installed in Laura's apartment. And I think that should be entertained. There are a number of articles and books written on ways of doing that, even with the concrete buildings all around. So if somebody in the fifth floor of that building, during a good sunspot cycle, did well, that's worth pursuing. Now, maybe in the wintertime, if Laura doesn't want to put the antenna inside the building, she can stick with her VHF operation in the winter and then do summer HF operation by portable. But, okay, it's a challenge. We at least have shown some of the possibilities here, Laura. I know that quite a few of us would put an antenna inside the building, inside the apartment, and occasionally stick it out the window only at nighttime. But even if they just left it in the apartment itself, there's lots of ways of doing it, which, even with buildings around, it's not going to be a top-notch operation, but you will have HF operation. So I guess we're going to give you more and more suggestions from week to week as we mull this one over. Various people who are listening to us are going to find articles on how to actually build the antenna and put it in the apartment, just to set up the antenna in the apartment, to borrow somebody's HF rig, and simply listen and to find out if it works. If you can hear them, there's a good probability you can talk to them. So just by setting up a simple wire antenna, only a couple of dollars worth of investment, borrowing somebody's HF rig, and just try listening and find out what gets through to your apartment, I think you're going to be pleasantly surprised. I'm going to go on to the next person now, which I think was Joe.
Okay, Jerry Judge.
I'll see what Eric's got to say. Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, I got a wacky idea for you. Consider if the building has steel in it. If the building is steel, how about loading up the building?
Absolutely. Very doable. So in other words, between the two electrical outlets, which are grounded to the building quite possibly, the electrical outlet that goes through a hole in the wall, and maybe you can see the steel of the building in the living room and do the same thing in the dining room. And so between the two, make those two connection points and load up the building. Every piece of metal, of an automobile, a building, a bridge, whatever, if you're smart enough, every piece of metal can be made into an antenna. So again, when we investigate stealth antenna books, we're going to find various ways of doing it. A simpler way would be to tape a dipole to the ceiling, or to the under the rug, under the floor, or whatever. There's various ways of doing it, and it can be done safely. And even if you worry about the safety, Andy can come along with his measuring equipment, and he can measure what is the safety of your particular antenna, and confirm that it's not a biohazard. All right, I'm going to go over to Joe. W-A-2-R-Y-Y. Go ahead, Joe. K-2-R-I-W on the TechNet. And we'll discuss anything except, let's see, what was that now called? Quadrature? No. QPSK? We'll eventually think of it. Over to you, Joe.
Was there anybody else in line before me? Because I was listening to the check, and I thought somebody checked in before me.
Okay. I think you were, there were two people ahead of you, which were a no. You're the next yes. Joe, go ahead.
Okay, I have two questions. The first question is about these digital TV converters. I'm curious about putting something like that up in play next year when the analog stuff goes to a digital, to a be able to get rid of basic broadcast. But my question about it, those are what is the minimum sensitivity or signal level required to make those things work adequately? Because being able to about 50 miles from the city, I like to put up an antenna, but I want to be able to be pretty much assured that it's going to work on most of the channels before I go ahead and put up an antenna and so forth.
K2DLS. Okay, DLS. Let me turn it over to Eric. Eric, I'm guessing that a good digital TV converter with a signal level of around minus 80 or minus 85 dBm, and you can give that to me in dB over a microvolt, I'm guessing the converter will be happy with that. Am I in the right ballpark? Over to you, Eric.
All right, Dick. Let's talk dBmV because that's how this stuff is rated. You should be able to get the receivers to lock at about minus 20 dBmV. The analog really wants from like 0 to 10. It's a really nice signal. But the digital stuff has a reasonable sensitivity. But the issue is not signal strength. The issue is what's it bouncing off of? K2RIW, K2J.
Okay, so in other words, how much multipath is present is certainly a major factor. With a fifth generation, seventh generation equalizer network in the converter that Joe is going to buy, what's the probability that he's likely to have multipath where he lives? He lives in Sayville, and I'm guessing he's about 35 miles airline from Empire State Building. On the South Shore, I think he's got reasonably clear path between him and Empire. What's your guess? I know it's a guess as to the probability of the amount of multipath he's going to get if he's got enough signal strength that will be inside of or outside of the capability of a modern day equalizer network in the digital converter. KE2EJ, K2RIW.
All right, K2RIW, K2EJ. You have to kind of guarantee that you can see the Empire State Building. Considering the way things were, as opposed to the way things are now, because I have some folks who are in Smithtown, and, we have that wonderful Jane Hill in the way that makes it impossible to see the antennas on the Empire. And currently, right now, because let's consider it to be 3 dB down from where it was, in Smithtown, it's a real rough ride. You need a decent antenna with some decent gain and a little bit of height. I know Sayville's further south. I don't know if there's anything blocking his path, but if he can see the building, then chances are he's going to get reception.
Yeah, I'm fairly sure Joe is willing to put an antenna with a little bit of gain and television aerial on the chimney of the house. Except for the local trees, I think there's a moderately good chance that he has quasi-direct line of sight on the South Shore. South Shore has got very little high land, so it's reasonably flat. I think quite a few of the people who travel on their sailboat in the Great South Bay, just south of his town, have no trouble seeing the Empire State Building. Your relatives in Smithtown, with a rooftop antenna, are they getting marginal digital reception, almost zero digital reception, or do you think it works 90% of the time? Give me a rough rule of thumb on that one. And by the way, Smithtown is a much further out community with a much worse path because of James Hill into Empire than is Fayetteville. So how is Smithtown doing from your point of view for over-the-air reception for people with rooftop antennas? KE2EJ, K2RIW.
K2RIW, K2J. Let's put it this way. By cable, your satellite, or watch Connecticut. You've got a picture from Connecticut. Unfortunately, it used to be a lot better than it is now, but they changed the antenna structure. And actually, there's the other issue of that when the license to output for